Hebrews chapter 12. There is in your bulletin a semi-detailed outline to help guide our thoughts. Hebrews 12. For the sake of time, I'm only going to read the first four verses again. But let's begin, shall we? Therefore, remember, we just finished the Hall of Faith. In fact, let's back up just one verse prior. You won't see it on the screen, so back up in your Bibles just to verse 39. And all these, having obtained a good testimony or a good witness through faith, did not receive the promises. Okay, they were very faithful to the end, and even when they died, they never received the promise. God having provided something better for us, that they should not be made perfect apart from us. Therefore, we also, he's tying the material into the heroes of the faith in Hebrews chapter 11. The first part of Hebrews 11 is really good. We love that until we get down to the part where it says, others were tortured, not accepting deliverance, that they may obtain a better resurrection. Others had trials of mocking and scourging, and yes, of chains and imprisonment. They were stoned and sawn in two. They were tempted and they were slain with the sword. And these are the witnesses. These are the testimonies. And now, chapter 12, verse 1, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily besets us. And let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. Looking to Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him who has endured such hostilities from sinners against himself, lest you become weary and discouraged in your souls. For you have not yet resisted the blood, striving against sin. And then we'll develop it a little bit more next week, verses 5. Have you ever felt like quitting? I have. Many times throughout my life, I felt just quitting, whether it was sports because you didn't make the A team or first squad or whatever it was. It's just there's many times where we've been tempted to quit, and we'll talk and give some more examples of that in our growth group in the next hour. Maybe a more relevant question would be, when was the last time you felt like quitting? Was it just recent? What were the circumstances that brought you to a point where you're just about ready to quit, throw in the towel and say, I'm done. I've had enough. As we think about those circumstances, the next question would be, what were the circumstances that you were wanting to get? What did you want to get from this circumstance that you weren't getting? Or maybe you were getting circumstances like at work, and just the stress and the heartache and the aggravation and the abuse. And it's like, you know, I don't need this. So in these circumstances, what were you wanting to get or maybe wanting to avoid that you wanted to quit? Endurance. Let us run the race that is set before us with endurance, looking to Jesus so we don't become just weary and just discouraged in our souls. Is it not true that a good, valuable character trait, but whether they're younger and as we teach them, one of the ideal character traits we want to teach them is endurance. You start something, you finish it. That idea of endurance. And to be able to handle the prolonged challenges of life without giving up. We've watched too many Hollywood movies. We've read too many romance novels where they all live happily ever after. I don't know where they're getting the material from, but we live in a broken world. And we're surrounded by brokenness every day. And there's many times where we just say, I quit. I quit. And you can see some of the possible scenarios there. Maybe you're struggling with a friendship. The friendship started out really well, but it's not going well right now. And maybe you're thinking, you know what? It's just going to take too much work, too much time. We'll just kind of let that one fade off into the sunset. Or maybe it's a difficult job. And not only is it the duties are difficult, but you've got all the drama in the office and the unreasonable demands of the boss and things of that nature or whatever it is. And you're saying, I don't need this. I quit. Perhaps it's a spouse who's becoming weary in marriage. You know, the wife is thinking, you know, I just wish he acted like he cared. The husband, you know, I wish he'd just cut me a little slack. I mean, it's just nag, 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 nag from the time I walk in to the time I leave. And you know what? It would be so much easier just to just let it go. I mean, ultimatums are given every day. The divorce word is being thrown back and forth just like common adjectives. And you know what? We don't need to do this anymore. Or perhaps even it could be, and here's another one that we could add, would be maybe with elderly parents. And elderly parents, and you're trying to do for them. I know of a man not involved in this church, but he has to run food to his dad every day because dad won't eat leftovers. Even though he tries to leave leftovers, he throws in the trash. So every day this man has to go bring leftovers. There's another side to that we won't get to. But perhaps it's a parent whose child's just becoming more and more rebellious. Perhaps it's in-laws, or should we say outlaws, who have now turned against you. Neighbors are just plain mean. And they're not moving anytime soon. And you're beginning to think, you know what? Let's just move. Let's not move. We get so much garbage in the world. When we come home, it should be safe. And then they have to put up with this. Let's just move. Perhaps the pain, the unending chronic physical pain, or maybe emotional pain. I'm done. I don't want to live like this anymore. The situations that we could maybe bring up where one would want to quit are really endless. You know, we could all think of some situation where some would be tempted to say, you know what, I just quit. Because every one of us can relate to the feeling of wanting to quit. But God in His Word, He's given us a challenge, a clear call to endure, to stick with it, to stay the course, or let's go way back to the beginning of Hebrews, don't drift. Stick to the faith. As we looked at last week, and we looked at those 9 requirements of faith. Stick to it. Don't give up and don't quit. The Bible uses many metaphors of endurance. You have the farmer, and he just continues to wait and wait and wait for the crop. You've got the soldier, you've got the athletes, and in this particular case here in Hebrews, it's the runner that he's using as a metaphor. This summer in August, we got Rio de Janeiro, the Olympics, right? And we're going to see men and women who have a tremendous amount of endurance. They've been practicing their event, their participatory sport that they're involved in. They've been practicing it for years, and sometimes 7 days a week, hours on end. They've been practicing and practicing and practicing. And it's a good visual for us today. Do you and I have the endurance of an Olympic athlete? I'll show you some ways that we can. Again, just very quickly remember the time setting of this book. It was written about 30 to 35 years after Christ has died. They're second generation Christians. The newness and the excitement has worn off. And now they're starting to get persecution. And the pressures of following Christ is on the rise. Some of the family members have possibly rejected them because they left Judaism. And that was, oh my goodness, How could you lose Judaism? I mean, and follower of Jesus, I mean, this is some radical non-conformity movement. Like, what is that all about? And there's a greater price to be paid for identifying with Jesus Christ. Some things that we living in America, we don't really don't understand or appreciate. I think one of the reasons this book was written well before AD 70 was because there's many references to the Old Testament temple and the sacrifices, and the temple hadn't been destroyed yet. And he's warning them to keep this faith, this new covenant, that Christ is superior, because not too many years from when this was written, the temple was going to be destroyed and Judaism as an organized religion would cease to exist as they had known it. And he didn't want them left empty. So he's saying, listen, Christ is superior. Put your faith in Jesus Christ. He's the better sacrifice. He's the better high priest. And besides, you don't need the priests or the sacrifices anymore. You can come boldly right into the inner sanctuary of God and petition him for grace to help. He was warning the Hebrews, you need endurance. You need endurance. The real problem, though, at least with me, is when the pressure kind of gets heavy and the requirements become rather overwhelming, the natural tendency for me is just say, okay, I quit. And especially with our generation, we still have some of the greatest generations, and some of the battles and some of the things that they accomplished is just unimaginable for our generation. If they had a super impossible task, they would say, well, this is just going to be harder. Many of us, sometimes myself included, when we look at an impossible task, we say, why even bother? Why even start? And it's the same thing with us here today spiritually. So when the fire gets hotter or things aren't going away, don't quit. Jesus taught us to endure. Jesus taught us to endure. Number one there, you can see Jesus is a superior model of endurance. You know, one of the beautiful things about the Bible is you never have to be the first person. You never have to be the first one. God always gives us models. God always gives us examples. God has given us a comprehensive book on how to live life. So there's the call for endurance there in verse 1. And there's a call of endurance because we have so great a cloud or company of witnesses. Now, I was preaching on this before the funeral, because sometimes funerals, people say that grandpa, grandma, mom, or dad, or whatever, is looking over the portals of heaven and looking down at us. Maybe they're in some big arena and they're looking down and watching life play out. Personally, I don't think that's the case. But setting that aside, the witnesses here within the context is not grandma, grandpa looking down from the portals of heaven on us. The witnesses is chapter, guess, 11, which we just developed. Therefore, we also, since we are accompanied with such a great cloud of witnesses, let us run the race that is set before us. Going back to anything from Noah to Abraham to Adam. And let me show you that. Look at chapter 11, verse 1. Chapter 11, verse 1. Chapter 11, verse 1. Now faith is the substance of things for the evidence of things not seen, for by it the elders obtained a good testimony or a witness. And then we drop down to Abel. And look at verse 4 there. By faith, Abel offered to God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, through which he obtained witness that he was righteous, God testifying of his gifts, and through it, he being dead, he is still speaking. He's a witness to faith in God. So then we come to chapter 12, verse 1, as I said earlier, therefore we also, since we are surrounded by such a great, tremendous cloud of witnesses, run and don't give up. Run and endure to the end. So we're looking at chapter 11 of the Hall of Faith there. We're not talking about some relatives who have departed looking down on us from heaven. But what is the point of these such a great cloud of witnesses? What's he trying to communicate to us? And what he's trying to communicate to us is this: if they finished well, so can you. You too can finish well. It doesn't matter how old you are. You can be like Abraham and Sarah. It doesn't matter if you've had a sinful past, a checkered, dubious kind of past you don't want anybody to know about. You can be like Rahab. It doesn't matter if you're asked to endure for a long time like Noah was when he had to build that boat for 120 years. Be like Noah. But don't miss the point here. And here's the point that we talked about last week, that you and I, though we may never be a recipient of the Medal of Honor or Bronze Star or Purple Heart or anything of that nature, you and I can each be inducted into the Heroes Hall of Faith. And what he's saying here now in chapter 12 is, as these people endured to the end, so can you. Because God uses ordinary people. He uses ordinary people to accomplish great things. And these are just ordinary people. Rahab, the prostitute. Samson and his, I don't know, he was really all about sex, I guess, and he just literally let Delilah kill him, in essence. So regardless of what your struggle is there, you too can endure to the very end. He did it with them. He can do it with you. Therefore, in chapter 11 refers to the heroes. Because they finished well, you can as well. Now, we got to get prepared for endurance. So this is just not naturally a characteristic, at least of this generation, probably if not of mankind in general, or the author of Hebrews wouldn't write and say, you guys need to endure. Not a born-in characteristic DNA trait. So one of the things that he tells us to is we got to get rid of the weight. Get rid of the weight. The weight is anything and everything that would hinder us. And it's not necessarily wrong, but it's not helping us accomplish God's goal of finishing our race. Anybody in track or cross country in your former life or earlier on in your life? I know Ken was in cross country, Tina, a couple others maybe. But, you know, nowadays, you buy shoes on weight, and you want the least amount of weight you could possibly have. Now, if you and I were going to jog the 2.6 miles to our house, how many of you would put on big old heavy winter boots and a big old heavy coat and big old gloves and pack your pockets full of whatever you... Man, you'd take as much off as you possibly could. And this is what, I keep saying Paul could have written it, possibly so could have Luke. But whoever the author of Hebrews is, he's saying, listen, it's not necessarily wrong, but it's weighing you down. Prioritize. Get rid of some of that stuff that is hindering you. And I think for many of us, what is really hindering our level of endurance is a lack of faith. That's why I think in the previous chapter, he talks about faith. Faith, faith. Chapter 11, verse 1. Faith requires an accurate definition. Faith is the evidence. Faith is the substance. And here is a faith. Now, you need to let aside every weight. You need to put it aside. And one of the biggest weights we have is unbelief. It's unbelief. We need to get rid of the sin, secondly. Contextually, again, as I mentioned, I think this sin could very easily be the sin of unbelief. And it would sound something like this: this is never going away. This is never going to change. I am stuck. God is not good. I deserve better than this. I don't want to live like this. I don't have to live like this. There are many options available to me. I don't have to do this. Besides, I have that siren call of the world saying, come over here. Grass is always greener on the other side of the fence. And then there's the cravings of my flesh screaming, go for it. You deserve a break today. You deserve better than this. Just scrap this and go start again. We need to get rid of that sin of unbelief. God is faithful. God has promised. Or as you see there in 1 Corinthians 10:13, many times Christians mistakenly say, I can't handle this anymore. I can't do this. But 1 Corinthians 10:13 says, there's no temptation taken you but such as is common to man. That's good. We're not unique. It's not like I was the only one who did something wrong. But how does the rest of that verse say? But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted more than what you're able to handle. And with the temptation, he makes the way out so you can bear it. So to be more accurate, we could say, I don't want to do this. I don't want to endure this anymore. But to say can't, that kind of violates 1 Corinthians 10:13. Temptation. God just won't help me overcome this. That's craziness. But sometimes we think it. God's not going to give me the victory in this matter. The habit. I will just never grow. I will never change. You know, he's never going to change. And she, certainly, is never going to change. Which for me is a good thing. So while I think within the context he's referring to unbelief, if the Holy Spirit right now is pointing to you and saying, that sin, though, that action, that attitude, get rid of it, well then, get rid of it. The need for endurance, as we still see again in verse 1, the race is long and hard. I got saved when I was 21, 22, and I am now soon going to be 59. It has been a decade-long race. It is a race that is set before us. In fact, as you see there in your notes, we're using the Greek word agon for agony. We're not talking a quick sprint. And you know, those of us that have been in church for a little while, we've seen some of these people. We sometimes call them the flash in the pan. They come in and they go, hoo-hoo, wah-wah, and then it's like you turn around and they're gone. Like, where'd they go? I mean, we're just kind of getting used to them, and they just like fall off the face of the earth. And we know there's weeds that could grow up. We know that maybe there's cares of the world or whatever. But for us here, we want to endure to the very end. We will have many marathons this summer across America. We don't want to be one of those who drop out and go along the sidelines. Since we have started this race, we are to finish this race. A wise person, though, enters to win. We need to win this race. We need to do the very best of our ability to accomplish and fulfill the race that God has called us to. 1 Corinthians 9 says, we are to run in such a way that you may win. We're not here for second place. We're not here for third place. We're here to win our race. Too many Christians, it just seems like they're too cavalier about whether they've truly entered the race or not. Some, as you remember in chapter 2, they've already drifted. I mean, they're already a casualty. They're off, lost somewhere off the face of the earth. And we already know of some Christians who have backslidden. Other Christians seem to be too content with just walking along at a leisurely rate. It's kind of like Robin and I. It's 2.3 miles around our subdivision. About 40-ish minutes we can do it. Depends upon how nice of a stroll we are, looking at the gardening and the flowers and the birds. Sometimes it's get a little longer. We're just moseying around. But if I'm going to try to run that 2.3 miles, I'm not going for a stroll. I mean, you gotta put some effort and energy into it. And we really, as Christians, have to focus our time and our energy and our resources, because otherwise, if we don't focus it on the race, we spend our time, our energy, and our resources on other things. And then when it comes to our race that God has given to us, there's nothing left. Because again, just again with this athletic motif, my recovery rate is not like it used to be. And it takes a lot longer for me to recover. So if I spend all my energy doing something and I'm supposed to run the race, it's like, forget it. Give me an hour nap first. And a whole bunch of Ensure or something like that. More importantly, though, we here at Oxford Valley Chapel, we want to accomplish all that we can, both individually and collectively so we can develop endurance, because that gives us more opportunities to rescue lives and restore relationships. If we're not enduring, if we're not persevering in difficult times, how are we going to help others? Going back to Hebrews chapter 4, if in the midst of your difficulty this week, you've yet not experienced the rest for the people of God, how are we going to offer it to other people? Again, rest to me last night was of no... God's rest to me last night was really not as beneficial when I was laying on my back sound asleep as today when I go home and Robin gets mad at me for picking on her during a sermon. See? In the midst of the race, and especially when facing obstacles, when getting tired, focus is important, and that brings us to chapter 2. The importance of focus. But I want to do something else. Go to chapter 3, verse 1, real quick, and I will tease you a little bit with this point. We'll come back next week. Chapter 3, verse 1 says this: Wherefore, holy brethren, partakers of the holy calling, consider the apostle and high priest of our confession, Jesus Christ. That word, consider, the apostle and the high priest of our confession, Jesus Christ, is the same word that's used over here in Hebrews chapter 12. So back to Hebrews chapter 12. We are to consider, we are to be looking to Jesus. And as you see there on your notes, it's basically we're taking our eyes off everything else and we are focusing on Jesus Christ. And it's very important that we do that. If any of you have been, and not many hands went up, but if you were in a race, and one of the things that we were taught many years ago is never look backwards to see where the other racers are. For me, it wasn't a problem. I was looking forward where all the runners were. But for some who were better than me, they said, don't be looking backwards, because when you look backwards, you're going to lose your speed. You're going to lose your rhythm. Look forward, okay? If I started to do pretty well and I'm coming down that home 220 line there on the track field, I would turn around and look at all the fans and, hey, I'm doing pretty good. Meanwhile, everybody else is just going by me. We have to have the right focus, or even worse yet, all we do is we look down at our feet. And sometimes when you're going up a hill, sometimes that's nice because then you don't see how big that hill is. You're just, but normally you don't want to look at your feet. Because otherwise, you don't see how you're progressing. You don't see how close the finish line is. And all you see is your feet and the monotony of the repetition. It's like, you know what, I'm going to quit. But if we're looking for the prize, if we're looking for the finish line, if we're looking for the tape, we keep striving. And then somewhere, somehow, as we come down that last 110 yards, we give it that kick. And where that energy comes from, we don't know it, but we'll see it here in August. These runners are half dead and they come down just the last 100 or so yards and they give it the kick. And they sprint with every ounce of energy they have to cross that tape, sometimes collapsing right afterwards. Our focus, though, must be Christ. It must be Christ. Because let's pause for just a minute and then I will be done here. Let's pause for a minute and think about some of the possible scenarios that we mentioned at the top of your outline. Where might their focus be who are willing to quit? So if in a difficult friendship, where might their focus be that they're saying, you know what, I'm going to quit? Probably not on Jesus Christ. If they're in a difficult job or in a difficult marriage or a difficult child and they're willing just to write all that off, probably their focus isn't on Jesus. It's on self, what I deserve. I mean, I gave birth to that brat. He should respect me. You know what? We don't need to be paying his car insurance, and we don't need this, and we just forget him. Their eyes aren't on Jesus. And the list just goes on and on and on, and we'll develop that a little bit. So here's the question, and I will end with this. If you're in a situation right now where you're tempted today or in the near future to throw in the towel, what are you looking at? Who are you looking at? What are you focusing on? Where are your eyes? Because we must focus on Jesus. He is the author and the finisher of our faith. And we'll develop that a little bit more next week. Endurance. seeing we are encompassed about with such a great a cloud of witnesses, let us run with endurance. Let us run with patience. The race, races are hard work. It takes a lot of work. Let us run the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. And then we'll get into it next week and see how he modeled the suffering that he went through for us.